It is Monday, the 2nd of June, and this is episode 210 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to an episode that's a little bit later, but it's going to be epically long in compensation to you. I am Chris, I'm going to steer us along today, and joined as ever by Ian, who will be rabbiting.
I'm like an excited bunny tonight.
We've just come off the back of the Apple developer conference keynote, so Ian's very, very excited.
I've basically stopped drinking Diet Iron Brew and I had three bottles of the fat stuff. I've just gone hyper.
But before we get to the actual content of that, we will round up the news that has happened since our last podcast, which was over a week ago now. So, apologies that this is going to be slightly longer, but it will be in two halves. So we'll just do the sort of news roundup and then we will get onto the Apple stuff and what we think that means. As far as the future of Apple and iOS goes, I guess.
And unlike so many other podcasts, I will add chapters and you can skip it. Skip to the Apple stuff because the rest is crap.
Starting with Microsoft. And they have demoed real-time speech-to-speech translation. So effectively, you can have someone who is German talking to someone who is not German and it will translate on the fly.
Wunderbar!
Wunderbar, yep. And they did a demo of this, and I guess it worked quite well. Although I have not seen the demo, people say it was quite impressive bit of tech.
Yep, I don't know German, but the kind of the guy was English. He was speaking in English, and Skype translated it to German. The German speaker understood it, replied in German. It translated it back to English.
Did it translate it as speech or as text on the screen?
Text on screen.
Yeah. So, and this is sort of just one step up from some we've seen apps and we've seen Google Translate where people can have conversations, but they press a button, then it translates and then it transmits kind of thing. And this is just a little bit more real time face to face. Nice feature.
Very nice.
I think we'll see this more widely now that the technology's there.
And what they were saying is later this year on desktop, but they want to get it out everywhere. Not just, you know, Microsoft platforms, but they want it
good for them
everywhere. That kind of new Microsoft where they're saying,
yeah, you know, it's a new world.
Yep, it's a service. We need to get it out there. There was some German speakers in the audience who were saying it wasn't quite perfect, but none of these language things are. If you've got a fluid native tongue speaker, you know, the same way you know if you pick a bit of German and translate it to English, it always looks a bit wrong, but you can get the intent. And if you're having a conversation, I mean, if I don't know German, French, Spanish, and it's given me 80%, 90%, and allowing me to have that conversation, it's fantastic.
Babelfish.
Yeah, and just think, I mean, in 5 years from now, this will just be...
That's what it's going to be?
This will just be, you know, that universal translator.
No, maybe not even 5 years. I mean, it's moving on all the time. It's one of those technologies that's silently moving on. It's not moving on at a pace that it could do because it's probably not right up there, but it's, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Well, Google bought that, what was it called? Was it something? WordLens? Which was, remember, it came out in iOS and you took a picture of like a sign and
and it actually overlaid it in its right font.
So they've bought that and basically it's free now because what the developers had done was basically the app was free, but you had to buy, depending on which language you wanted, I think you paid 99p for each language. Mm-hmm. And Google have now just put out for free and they're going to integrate that into something, probably Android. And it's fantastic.
It, you know, as soon as you break down barriers, you know, amazing things can happen. Microsoft CEO, he has said they're not selling Bing off to Yahoo. These are kind of things and rumors that were put around before he took over. He's not selling Xbox. And he said, I'm in charge. And okay, Bill might be in the background sort of helping me out, but it's me that's running the show. Boys, listen to me.
And this was all off. So it was the kind of code conference last week, which was the Cara, Swisher, Walt Mossberg conference. So there's a few of the stories we've got tonight all came out of that. It was actually quite a good tech conference where lots of things were revealed.
Yeah. So anyway, he's sort of laying his authority down and say Xbox was looking shaky for a while there. So actually he's come out and, you know, given the solidity. Self-driving cars has been Google self-driving cars specifically has been news story across everywhere across the media sphere, including just everyday news on TV. They've released their kind of plans for their two-seater self-drive car, which they want to roll out. It's only 25 miles an hour car, but basically all it's got is a start and stop button. And they've obviously been running this technology in across near their campus for a while now. And they appear to be getting allowances to be able to do this, and they're going to build 400 cars?
There's 100 over the next year that they're building as kind of almost like betas.
That's right, 200, yeah.
I'm calling it a beta. They've probably got a far better name. Prototype, that's a better name for it, not a beta.
I quite like it. Yeah, so, and they've deliberately made it cute to make it kind of accessible. They've put wing mirrors on for some reason. Why would you do that? But yeah, they've made it out of soft material, so when it starts rampaging out of control, when it hits people, it's just not going to hurt. It's going to bounce off them. But yeah, it looks like it's really going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, this is future stuff. And you talked about Babelfish. This is another one where it's a, you know, people always talked about self-driving cars, flying cars. You know, where's my jetpack? Like
all those kind of future. Yeah, futuristic sci-fi films have always done this, haven't they? You just get in and off it goes, whisks you. And most of them fly.
Yeah, but, and yeah. I was actually talking to one of my friends last week. He's an absolute car nut. And we're just talking around things like, you know, if you look going forward, you know, all these, you know, electric cars are right now in the range is 200 miles. Mm-hmm. For almost everybody, that's fine. You know, everybody's got this big thing about that's not that. I mean, once infrastructure's in place, all these things become...
Once these things become throwaway almost, and when electricity is being generated by something other than fossil fuels, then things actually become better off. And yeah, and who knows, maybe you get things like car relays, where even if 200 miles isn't far enough, if everyone's got one of these Google cars, because they're just, you know, like your taxi, off you go, your car relay. Just get in, tell it where you want to go.
There's definitely
25
something...
miles an hour is going to take you a while to get there, though.
It is. But I mean, that's where we are right now, and it's a fully autonomous. I'm still not sure about the whole no steering wheel. I'm surprised. No.
But the thing is, if you put a steering wheel in it, people will grab it and start interfering. And actually, I'm sure statistically, you're more likely, much more likely to have an accident if you're driving a car than if one of these things is driving for you.
Yeah. What was the first thing you thought of when you saw that?
The car?
Yeah.
Jimbo Jet Set. I've just thought of that.
All right. Mine's was Johnny Cab from Total Recall.
Yes, it does have that. Yeah, it does have that vision, but Jimbo's face on it. The patents argument has moved on a bit. So Sergey Brin, Google's co-founder, has come out and said he doesn't think the business process should be patentable, and he also says that they need to, whoever owns a patent actually needs to put that into action. They shouldn't just be able to own the rights to something which they then farm out and charge you for using their intellectual property. So that's, I think people have said those two things for a while now.
Yeah, and I'm still, got to be honest, the business process one always kind of confuses me a bit, because there's, I think a lot of things are open to interpretation with it. But I think the second one, where it's like if you own a patent and you don't do something about it, you know, within a certain amount of time, because you might have like the best idea ever, and you need to be given some sort of time to do something with it.
Because you could have the best idea, and if you haven't got the resources to try and do it, then again, the argument is then you have to go and take that risk on.
Absolutely.
And go and, you know, that's up to you. That's your call. If you believe in it, then go do it and find the person who's going to fund it. I guess then you could get, you know, venture capitalists who just say, well, if we don't fund it, he's going to crumble and we'll have it anyway.
But certainly, I mean, it's obvious, and the one that's obviously the closest home is that podcast one, you know, where they're sat mm-hmm. on it and sat on it and sat on it. It's obviously waited till podcasts have taken off, and it's something that is they can actually is now actionable. And about 2 years ago, said we've got this patent, that's ours. We've never actually put a podcast out in our life, but we own the concept behind it. We're going to
we just, like I say, we've waited until something kicked off that we've, you know, wrote down ages ago.
Yeah.
Also, right to be forgotten. So this was another story we talked about a couple of weeks back. People arguing and the European Court agreeing that people have the right to be forgotten. So if you had an old criminal record, you could now, were allowed to ask Google, excuse me, to remove that record from their search indexes. Google weren't very happy about this and were a bit astounded that this actually went through the courts and came out with that agreement. But they have now put together first of all, a web form so you can actually request your request the right to be forgotten. And also they've put that together a panel to try and understand how the heck they're going to be able to implement this going forward and balance it off. And how do you, without reviewing on a case-by-case basis, how the hell do you do this job of censorship?
Especially because, I mean, the statement was, in implementing this decision, we will assess each individual request and attempt to balance the privacy rights of an individual with the public's right to know and distribute information. So it sounds like they're saying, we'll give you the right to ask, but we're going to determine whether we think that's the right thing. And it's going to be interesting because they always said, we don't want to be judge and jury, but they've said, but we're going to.
But they have set up they call it independent panel. But anyway, I mean, they were on TV this morning, the guys were on TV this morning talking around it. The guy from Wikipedia is on that panel. You know, there's some big industry people. And I guess as well as being judge and jury at the moment, as they're being forced to do, I think they are also trying to just work out if there's a balancing act. Is there a formula you can put to this? Or is it something that has to be done on every single unique case?
Well, I mean, they had 12,000 requests in 48 hours.
And they, you know, on the news this morning, they were going on, they obviously pick out the cases that they want to, but, you know, previous criminals and politicians with a bad history that they want to be able to get access to.
Exactly. You know, so if you, and there's obviously some people out there, I'm thinking of like, Fred Goodwin, you know, so in charge of Bank of Scotland, Royal Bank of Scotland, killed the business. Everybody kind of knows him. But if there was somebody that is not as well known as him and is basically a crook, I'm not saying Fred Goodwin is a crook.
Well, there's CEOs that go around who just go around being criminals, basically.
But they constantly, you know, set up business, fold. Yeah. What happens if somebody wants to hide all that? You know, hide all these company records or hide all this, you know, everything the BBC has reported about me, hide it all.
And that's the thing, it's not just a case, say, that has come out and has... I mean, you can understand it if maybe you've had, you know, a rape case brought against you that was then dropped or for whatever, you know, things like that, which can really, really affect your life, even though that you've been proven innocent, you know, by all manner and all the court systems say. But that can affect you going forward. And maybe that's where this comes in. Maybe that's, you know... not having that record readily accessible when you search for your name, for example. I don't know. There's a case something along those lines, and I guess that's what the European Court was thinking about when it came up with its decision.
And even, I mean, the other thing that I've just stuck at the end as well, it's not just, I mean, obviously these requests aren't just in English. You know, it's across the EU, so how many different languages are people requesting this in? How many different
and
panels?
What if that report was made in all those different languages? How do you go and make sure you pick it all up? Yeah, it's hard work and
boggles,
impossible, pretty much.
It boggles the mind.
Samsung's been talking to us about their health aims for their devices. Probably trying to preempt Apple's announcements today when everyone thought they were going to talk health a lot more. And they sort of seem to just blurt out some stuff.
Yeah, and I guess we'll come on to it later on. Apple pretty much did the same. But Samsung spent 40 minutes doing this, and Apple spent about 3. So,
So they showed some hardware, they showed some concepts, they showed a bit of software going on. But
and the hardware you couldn't buy; it was just a future concept of what they may or may not do. The software was a future software that isn't out just now, but it's a future software that we will make available to developers. It did feel
hot air.
Yeah, it did feel like a. Tell you what, let's just do a press conference. We're also doing what they're doing. We're actually first for a change because we always copy them.
They also released, or they've launched their first Tizen phone, So this is not Android, basically. This is the Tizen's an operating system. I don't know anything about this. I don't know if anyone really touched on this before. Is this to do? Is this for their smaller markets?
We have mentioned, and I guess it's Tizen. We've mentioned Tizen because Samsung started developing this. I think it was about 2-3 years ago. They're the main people behind it, but also they've released their smartwatches. So their second generation smartwatches came out with Tizen support,
right.
And they announced earlier this week that they're actually going to release Tizen for the original ones as well, replacing Android on them.
Is this a completely separate operating system? Do we know, or is it a fork of Android or anything like that?
I think it's separate. It's it was Linux based.
Wow. So this is them trying to remove themselves a bit from the Android, you know, process. But the reason they've done so well is out of Android. I think they'd be if they forget that and they believe they're bigger than that, then I think they're going to be in trouble.
I do recall something like 200 or 300 developers at Samsung were working on Tizen. But that's small change for Samsung. I think this is really just we're not got eggs in all in one basket. If something does go squiffy around about Android, you know, whether, you know, for whatever reason, you know, that
Titan gets it ripped down,
or even, you know, you can't differentiate between the hardware, or they fall behind. You know, an HTC does come out with the best hardware, and all of a sudden they look, you know, old and outdated, which I just can't see, because they seem to be able to tool up and throw something out, you know, within days of anybody else. You know, someday Apple did their gold iPhones, and you know, 2 weeks later we've got a gold Samsung Galaxy 5 on the shelves. You know, it was just they seem to be better than most at, you know, copying and getting stuff out the door really quickly. So this is a new phone out in Russia later this year, and again lots of people predicting it, but there's also a Tizen developers conference. This week in San Francisco. A strange week to have a developers conference in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, let's see how many people they get.
Yeah. So it's a toe in the water, and I think it's just there is an
alternative. Maybe cover your bases, why not?
Yeah, and it's focus isn't so much on, they're focusing a lot on web content. So it'll play HTML5 apps really well, seemingly. So again, slightly different to Android and obviously iOS, which have gone very heavily down the app route.
2 weeks we've got. 2 weeks grace until a massive cyber attack comes back online. So this is basically our National Crime Agency has been able to coordinate. I think it's wider than them, but anyway, there's been a coordinated attack on a bot network, and they have temporarily got control of the, you know, the controlling computer network, and therefore the bot, which can, you know, is contaminated across 15,000 odd machines in the UK, is currently toothless. But they don't think it's going to be long before the bot owners are able to gain control again. So they're kind of fighting over this command and control center.
And similarly, ISPs are contacting people in the UK who they have detected have this installed. So it's 15,000 machines in the UK. I mean, it's not a trivial number. It's a lot of machines.
I think they set up a body recently. I don't know if it was the National Crime Agency. Didn't they set up a cyber crime agency as well?
Yeah.
And I wonder whether this is them sort of flexing some muscle there.
It's weird because
trying to say how good they are.
Yeah, because there was that. I'm trying to remember its name because we joked about it and how much money was getting poured in. And they were going to do cyber alerts. But then this one comes out and it seems to be not them. Get Safe Online has worked with the NCA. And it's like, where's this other mob? We've got 50 guys working stopping all this. I'm confused.
They missed it when they were ordering pizza. maybe they're owning it. So basically they reckon there's two weeks here you can get clean. So make sure you update your operating system, make sure you're updating your virus and anti spyware, and get yourself protected in this gap that you've got, basically.
And basically this is it's called Game Over Zeus. And it's searched specifically for files containing financial information. If it cannot find anything it deems are worth, then it installs CryptoLocker, which is basically a ransomware program. So it pops up and says it wants a Bitcoin. So it wants like $300 or $400. And you pay your $300 or $400 and it removes itself.
Right. Well, yeah, because you're guaranteed that's going to happen as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, cheers. Yes, that nasty bastards. Twitter is talking and slightly, well, not just talking, they're actually fiddling with their newsfeed. So Facebook a while back put in algorithms to identify what were the posts you really did want to look at in your timeline. So it wasn't, you know, if you didn't know, your Facebook timeline is not just your, you know, a constant stream of everyone who's posting as your friend. It's the ones that it thinks you want to hear, and it bases that off on a whole ton of different things about your interaction with that person and how many people liking the post and all sorts of comments going on and things like that. So basically Twitter is now fiddling with that as well, and it's got a lot of people's necks up.
Yeah, well, maybe it's just me. Well,
so angry you can't talk.
It's just so Facebook always irritates me with all their little tweaks and changes that they do. Like I'm going to Facebook just now, and there's a good chance of they being on like just you know just most recent. Every so often it flips back to top stories.
I know.
And the Facebook iOS, sorry, the iPhone app changed recently, so that it's buried being able to pick most recent. So it's doing top stories by default, and you can't toggle it at the you can't toggle it on the iPhone. You've got to fire up Facebook, go into more, scroll down more, and then against you'll see feeds, and there's a narrow in the feeds title bar, and then you can pick most recent. So it's just absolutely buried, and it just means there's lots of stuff that they're deciding you don't need to see that. And I do want to see it. I want to see it. If I follow something, I want to see it, and that's where I like Twitter. If I follow it, I know I'm going to get it, unless they decide. Unless the content owner said, actually, I want to remove that again. I get the feed, and it's up to me by lists or by filtering or by turning on mutes, etc., what I want to see.
Or to just flick through a days that you can't be asked to
yeah,
keep
Yeah, well, like, I come home, there's 900 tweets. No, I'm not.
Sod it.
Yeah, but that's my choice. And what I don't like about this is basically is Twitter saying, actually, we reckon
we know best.
We know what you want best. And that to me is like, yep, that media company is going to pay to inject stuff into my stream. Mm. And when out of all your things, you know, Microsoft has actually dumped us a bit more cash. If you follow them, we're going to bold that. We're going to make sure that's at the top. We'll make sure that dominates your feed. And I know they're saying we're not going to do that. We're going to look at, you know, what your friends follow and what other things pop up and make sure you follow. And they're doing it slightly on the web. Have you been on the website recently?
No.
They've started doing things like some tweets are bigger
right.
than others to say this is more important. But some of the ones are random. It's just like, how have you decided that? Is it number of retweets? Is it number of favourites? Is it because one person's favourited it? But somebody could have favourited it because it was like, that's the worst thing I've ever read. You know, so I don't really want to see that. You know, yeah. It's like, so I don't know. I just leave it alone. You know, that's why I like Twitter.
Mm. But it's one of those things that you can understand it if you are able to toggle it, and they, you know, so you can choose whether you want to turn it on or off, make it a feature rather than an enforced thing. While we were touching on Facebook and their apps, I blooming hate their iPad app at the moment. The amount of times that I just load it and it sits there like apparently doing nothing. Obviously it's loading data and feeds in the background, but there's no on-screen record to say that. It won't scroll. You know, if a picture's up on the screen, you can't get rid of it. The comments don't appear. It's hung at least twice. It's just, they said they're rolling away from the HTML5 implementation because it wasn't ready. But I tell you what, their replacement is absolutely dire at the moment, and it's actually giving me rage.
It just annoys me that, so I can understand on the apps they've now fixed it, but every 3 or 4 days on Facebook, on the web, it'll revert back to top stories. And it's like, I can tell straight away because the top story is like, you know, from 12 hours ago and you're missing.
Even when you're going through stories and you're halfway down the feed, suddenly it can jump and suddenly it will be putting stories in where you are rather than at the, it's something's wrong with it. And I cannot comprehend the amount of data and how they even work it to work it as they do now. Nevertheless, you know, yes, it seems like they've overcomplicated it, over egged it.
Leave it.
Apple. So we're onto Apple stuff now. Oh. Well done, you've got this far. But this was actually news that was released ahead of the conference we've been talking about. So this is that kind of final news story from that was the week that was. And they bought Beats. So the Dr. Dre owned, I guess, music and music hardware company. They bought them for $3 billion. And they're not buying them to sort of wrap them into Apple. They're trying to, like we've been hearing lots of recently, they've bought them to keep them as a separate company, really, and try and take on what's best of both worlds.
Yes.
And everyone was like, why are you announcing this now?
So this had been, what was it, 3 weeks ago or something? Was it the Financial rumors. Times put this out and said, you know, Apple are buying Beats, and everybody was like, really? And then it disappeared, and there was some people were like, this is just spoof. And then there was a video, Dr. Dre and that other actor guy, and they were talking about the first billionaire and rap, and And people were saying that this is going to scupper the deal because Apple doesn't like, you know, these things leaking. And but they've bought them. And it's basically $500 million for the kind of Beats software music streaming service and $2.5 billion for the hardware.
Yeah, streaming. So that's going against what Apple have been defined by to date. But they've seen a bit of a roll-off in the actual sales of that. And things like Spotify have got a grounding and a... I don't know if they're still growing, but they're certainly still capturing a lot of the buzz.
Yeah, so there was a, and I'm just looking at the graphic here that I was trying to search for. I mean, they're talking about, and this is like music consumption, so this isn't equating to value, but there was 118 billion streams last year in America against 1.3 billion digital track sales.
Yeah, so you
But a digital track sale would maybe be 99 cents, and one of these streams is 0.001 or something stupid like that.
But the streams have much more potential to grow than...
Oh, yeah. Streams are up 32% year on year, and digital track sales are down 6%.
And when data shuffling around gets cheaper and cheaper, and as broadband is able to cope more and more with a lot of data, it makes more sense to shuffle that data around the pipes rather than, you know, physically sell.
And I must admit, I was kind of surprised when they announced this, or the rumors were 3 weeks ago, and then when they came out and said it, cause it was like, would you not have bought a, you know, because like the biggest seems to be Spotify. They've got 10 million users. They seem to have
which
a lot.
Which is not
of,
many, though. I mean,
no,
when
but
you,
Beats
when
have
you look
got 200,000 users.
Right, okay. So,
you know,
it's,
so it's
tiny.
It's like dropping the ocean. But I mean, I think the Spotify users is 10 million paying users. So I think the actual user base of Spotify is massive compared to the paying ones. And I've not seen a video yet. I'm sitting in my pocket as if it is physically in my pocket, but in pocket to watch the video. And at Recode last week, the Code conference last week, there was an interview with Eddie Q and Jimmy Iovine. I don't know how to pronounce it. Certainly a couple of people were tweeting about how this Jimmy Iovine, who's a similar music, industry legend, is such a smart guy, and even Shaq this morning says, "I need to watch it. This guy's amazing." You know, it's like just seem to have the smarts, really good answers for questions, knows where he wants to go, and it seems a bit of a kind of, you know, acquiring, I guess, a cool brand, because whether you like Beats or not, they do seem to sell a lot of overpriced headphones.
Yeah, and it's they've always had one of those things whereby they've got the brand. And sometimes, I don't know if it's because they've got the brand that everyone sort of deriles it and a bit, you know, be sniffy about it. But nevertheless, they sell out of products. And maybe Apple have come along and said, look, you've got this amazing brand. You've got this, the right look and feel. We can actually help you with, realizing that into an amazing bit of hardware as well. So maybe that's where they're going to work together. Good for them.
Yeah, certainly will be interesting to see. Because there's some of the folk that have reviewed Beats Music, the subscription service, said the curation side of it and the kind of the way they were promoting new, you know, that kind of music discovery was the best they'd seen. You know, so it's better than Spotify and its shared playlist, and it was a really good front end to it.
Problem being that's easy to implement and copy, right?
Yeah, and it's American only right now. You know, so it's, unless you want to sign up with an American credit card and stuff, you're kind of stuffed. Yeah.
Alrighty, so we're halfway through because we've got through the news that was, and now we are on to tonight's keynote. And basically, it was kind of slightly, it was a slightly different tone to tonight's keynote. And that tone was very much, look, we are a facilitator for you. I mean, he's directly talking to the developers that are in the conference, but they were showing how they are now the facilitators of this infrastructure. And it's not now just across apps on, you know, your devices and stuff. They are now merely just, you know, making things available to developers to just, you know, go across any of their devices now. And that's the kind of tone they came out with.
I think also tone-wise, they appeared, you know, very confident and didn't waste a lot of time. Our stores are really good, you know, year on year we've been doing X, Y, and Z. It was just like, the first video was about 6, 7, 8 minutes. It was like,
And that English guy with the pointy moustache offended me greatly. God, he bugged me.
It was more the guy who liked his Tinder app and was looking for the kind of, oh, crazy girl. Oh,
it was like, he was just weird.
Yeah.
But I hipsters bug me right now. I don't know. Sorry, hipsters.
Sorry.
Let's take your pointy moustaches and stick them in your eyes.
I'll unbutton my top button now.
Exactly. Rock on. A conference room full of either were a hipster, probably nothing to do with the programming world, and then or check shirt man. That seemed to be the two clientele in there.
Or child labour, because Apple. Yeah, so I know Apple have done all these reports that say we don't employ children, but there was 13-year-old developers in the room.
So they started off with OS 10. So the new one that's going to be out in fall, the beta's out now, but they're going to call it Yosemite because it's going to explode in a catastrophic. Did you not know that? Yosemite is on top of a super massive volcano.
I did know that, but I just thought it was a fantastic place in America to be.
Yes, it does look amazing. So they have tied into the iOS looks. So we're going to have a fabulous Safari icon. But it's all the new flat looked. And they were talking about materials. I quite like the fact that, I mean, okay, they rammed it home repeatedly, but how they are making their windows out of materials. It was no longer talking about it as though it was a bit of software. They were saying, we've made out this beautiful translucent material. And it's like, yeah, you can... Johnny Ive wasn't there today, but he was in spirit.
Exactly. He wrote the script.
Everything's transparent. Like, you know, iOS went down to sidebars, show through your background, and main areas show windows underneath. Stuff
I've got to be honest, some of that looked really good. And it looks like they've also maybe addressed the concern, because everybody said about iOS 7, very bright. And if they bring that to the desktop, we'll be dazzled. So there is a dark mode. And so can kind of, you know, almost, you know, tone it all down. And I think there'll be quite a few people that will jump on that, because I actually thought it looked really nice.
I thought it looked fine.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's fine. I fell for iOS like other people, you know, that when we went to iOS 7 and the new look and feel, I was like.
I told you at the time I had issues. You know, I definitely had issues. But at the same.
One thing I have seen, even. We're going to come on to iOS, but I noticed some of the little buttons and things have gone back to being a little bit more button-like.
Yeah.
So the sliders, instead of being completely flat sliders, they've actually now got a 3D bezel. Again, just to give that little sense that it is something that you can physically touch and move. And I think that's the right direction to come back to. But anyway, so yes, let's try not to get too bogged down. They added obviously all the flattened look and feel. They add notification center. So they've... couple of extra features there, right?
It was a today view and also extendable via third-party apps. So certainly as I was going through it, I was like, I hope that comes to, you know, iOS 8, which we'll cover later on. It is doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's because it's all so tied together, we might as well, you know, mention these things as we go along.
Yeah.
A lot of, again, the kind of feel that you got from it was how things are getting opened up to that interaction. Where they're releasing a feature somewhere, it's going to be open to developers to actually inject into.
Yes, and you must have used, I've forgotten its name. I was going to say dashboard, and as soon as I was going to say it, I thought that's the wrong name.
Launchpad?
No, you know how you've got where all the widgets used to be inside OS X? Anyway, it looks like that's all heading to Notification Center. You can turn it off in Mission Control. I always turn it off. I never use the thing. Clearly,
So now that's coming to Notification Center. It's a bit more like Google Now, as in the kind of things it's bringing up. So it's bringing up calendar appointments. It's bringing
up dashboard.
It's dashboard. Yeah. So calendar views and appointments, but also, as I said, you can have widgets in there. So you can, if you install an app that happens to integrate with the widgets, then you can add that widget in there. And eBay was a given example at some point during the evening where you can actually make a leading bid straight in the.
It was on the iPad, so it's in Notification Center. It showed you that you've now lost out, and you just said actually highest bidder.
Ping. Yeah, and all these things tied together. So even though we're talking about Notification Center in OS 10 here, actually it's it works across all the other platforms as well. Spotlight, they have made that into a kind of, it's always been the central search, but they're trying to make it a little bit more front and center on the desktop, literally by making it a, once you click on your magnifying glass, the search box comes up big on your screen. And then as you're typing search, it will actually show you search results, not just from your computer. So you can still search for documents. You can launch applications via this thing. But it also will search the internet on certain key locations, whether that be Wikipedia or, I guess, just selected data sources.
Yep. And to me, that was it's a direct. I mean, we've had Quicksilver years and years ago, and then it became, and then there was other things like LaunchBar and Alfred. I use Alfred right now, and it does feel like a kind of direct challenge to those kind of launcher type apps. Except because it's so well integrated, it feels like they'll deliver maybe 60 or 70% of the features, but it'll be superior.
For many years, people have been trying to get people, though, to use their operating systems via the search method. And this is them trying to do that as well. It's never worked. It's never, people like having...
Oh, see, I disagree. For me, it works.
Mm. Okay.
You know, so maybe... I can't use like my Mac without them.
Right, okay, there you go. So it's funny how different people, I like organize folders, and I like that route in and things like that. So
no, my first install is like I get Alfred on. So get Dropbox on, and then I get Alfred on, and then I can start putting my plugins into Alfred, and then I start to be able to, you know, launch apps quickly and hack my way around. That's just the way I do things. But I thought Spotlight thing was a kind of bit of a kick into something like Google, because they were showing you how, you know, don't go to your browser and search from here, and we can bring you Wikipedia results, we'll bring you Yelp results, we'll bring you, and it was all, we'll give you these results.
A bit later on, they even said when they were talking about Safari, you can do your basic, you know, Google search if you want, but why would you want to when you've got this coming up straight away?
And if you think, and so fair enough, the Macs don't have the same traffic as Windows, but that's a, you know, if you're no longer going to Google to do that search, and you're just doing it there, and they're not getting their ad traffic, and they're not getting that result, that's...
Depends what results it comes up with, though, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah, but
depends if they can nail it.
Dot go.
iCloud, Dropbox. I mean, iCloud Drive. Pretty much turning iCloud into Dropbox. They're feeding it across all platforms now, so you don't have to. You can. They will roll out to PC. But effectively, it just syncs out documents everywhere, just like Dropbox, basically.
Yep, for far cheaper.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. They haven't said exactly what it is.
Yeah, yeah, price a little. We'll cover it in iOS.
All right, fine. Mail. So they're very excited about their new mail client. They've added MailDrop, which is you send it kind of functionality. So it will actually send big attachments up to 5 gig via an online storage. So if you're on... If you happen to be using a mail client at the other end as well, then you can see that 5 gig attachment straight away and download it. If not, if you're in something like Google Mail, then you have a link to go and grab it off of their service. So there you go. That's one thing. And markup on emails. I don't know why people... I mean, I've never had the need to do this. Maybe I have and I just didn't know it. But basically, you can now scribble on an email with, a picture attachment and scribble over it and then reply. A PDF as well, I think.
Yeah, it's funny, I don't do it as much at home, I don't think, but at work I'm signing off 10 sheets and expense forms and stuff. So you know, it's like once a week.
So being able to sign them is actually easy.
Yeah, it's actually not. It's not a daft feature. I think it's just one of these things that depending on what you do, I mean, if I go back 6 years ago, it wasn't that common. And at the moment it's kind of, you know, is that 2 or 3 times a week I need to get my signature into a doc just to actually act as a signature. And it's there. I like the fact that they spent at least 30 seconds saying we're just trying to make this super robust, because the mm-hmm. Mavericks release hasn't been, you know, they kind of fluffed.
I never used that anyway as a Gmail web client, but it's user. So, but I know that other people have said that it's just a bit frustrating.
Well, and it's I kind of blame both of them. Gmail doesn't support. They're not IMAP.
Well, but, I use the web.
I know, but the web browser sucks.
I love it.
No, I don't. I've just naturally never got into it.
Love it. It's perfect.
No, I know. Different things. It's a bit like the launcher.
Yeah, yeah. Safari. They've claiming it's massively fast again, and you know, I think recently we've been talking about how Chrome seems to have lost that focus about being the super speedy browsers, and now Safari wants to take over. They've made it Chromeless. pretty, well, not Chrome less, but it's, you know, it's far, far less gubbins going on. And they're using a unified search bar now, which again ties in with the Spotlight as well. Your favorites pop up when you, you know, when you first click in it and all sorts of things. And they've, yes, they've standard support for, what do they call it? Advanced HTML5 video streaming or something like that. Basically, it means that Netflix now lasts two hours longer on a on your laptop, which is pretty clever.
Yeah, and it's something I've actually been conscious of. Lots of people saying, you know, Chrome is a bit of a battery hog, and I can see it. I can see it on when I'm using the MacBook Air. I can see the it is more. If I open up the same tabs and swap between them, you can see the difference in performance. So I'm active. I do like Chrome. I must admit, I've always used Chrome now for what, three, four years, but I can see me giving Safari a right good try.
The only thing about Safari is now it causes more problems for itself because it is doing more web standards things actually, which other browsers have sort of let slide a little bit to make actually usability possible. Whereas Apple have quite a few different things that they now implement, which mean that applications don't work on Safari.
And there's things that I still like, and like, see, just being able to pin a tab and just seeing the icon in Chrome, I love. I know it's a dead simple thing, but I love it. And see tonight, they showed you that they show you having like loads of tabs and be able to scroll all these tabs, and it's like,
and I bet there's no scroll bar, so again you'll lose it, like you lose the scroll bars at the left and right of screens, and sometimes it's not obvious that there is one there.
That looks like a developer having a hard on for being able to implement something without actually thinking that this is a good thing.
Get rid of it. But now we can't do anything. Don't care. If you do a zigzag gesture there, everything will be fine. So yeah, Spotlight. JavaScript's much faster, yeah. I think that's pretty much killed Safari, and they've got a horrible icon for it now as well. Fabulous. So something now they're calling continuity. So this is their new watchword. So what the heck is continuity?
So this is basically actually starting to tie your devices together far more seamlessly. So if you're invested in multiple iOS devices and Mac devices, this looks really nice. So the first one was a big one. AirDrop now finally works between iOS and OS X. OS X. So Henry will be giving me a virtual slap.
I've been saying OS X all evening.
I know.
So basically you can now fling files between devices that they're next to each
finally,
other.
Finally. You know what I mean? It's just like about time. And I bet you there's a little asterisk comes out that says only this year's hardware, you know, from the back side of it. I'm waiting for it, because when AirDrop first came out, it was not supported on, you know, last year's laptop. So we'll see.
Their closing gambit was where iOS 8 was going to be available everywhere, pretty much. Anywhere that iOS 7's gone, iOS 8's going to follow.
Yeah,
so
I think everything back to even the iPhone 4S, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. So they gave some demos, right, of a couple of things.
So that was the AirDrop. Handoff was a kind of their big wow new feature. So this was, I'm working
that just sounds rude.
Yeah, I'm working on a document on OS X. And if you fire up your iPad, it knows you're working on it, and there's a little icon appears in the bottom corner. And if you swipe that icon, it basically just takes control and you're working on the document on your iPad. And that works both ways. It also works between iOS devices. So if I was doing an email, and for whatever reason I'm doing an email and I have to run, I can just continue on doing the email on the iPhone.
I mean, these for a lot of people, they're kind of, I guess, narrow use cases, shall we say. But nevertheless, if you are starting to email, then yes, and you think, oh, actually, there's an image on my main computer, which actually I want to insert into there. You can just put down the iOS device, and you can ping it up on your Mac, and you can off you go, basically. So, but there was a couple of other ones. They had the instant hotspot. So again, the devices can talk to each other, so you can set up instant connections between devices if they offer that facility. Messaging was all kind of combined. But I guess you can make phone calls from your desktop now via your iPhone. So as long as your iPhone is nearby, you can, and on your iPad as well. So you can actually physically make the call. Even if your phone is in another room, as long as it's on the same network and it can send that signal, you're good to go.
Yep. So, and I'm just on their page just now. Yep. You have an iPhone, you can now send and receive both iMessage and SMS messages right in your Mac. So So no longer it's just iMessage, but you can send an SMS. And the same with the phone calls. So the demo they showed was your phone and Dr. Dre and doing this really crummy, cringy.
Hi. Oh, this is a surprise.
Yeah.
You know, he talks just like that.
When do I need to get in before Tim gets in? Oh, hey, you need to get in before 4:30. So, yeah, very good.
But anyway, yeah, but again, it was that, I think it was what we talked about last time. It never felt like that had that integration between the Mac and these other, you know, all the iPad and the iPhone were working quite well together, but actually it was Mac didn't come into it. And this is really bringing the three together.
I thought the continuity stuff looked really good.
Yes. And again, there's APIs that they talked about, and that was all kind of released in the developer section, which we'll come on to a bit later. But again, they're available. This continuity, this between things is available to you as well as a developer. iOS 8, again, pretty much similar stuff, because as I said, a feature, wherever you saw a feature on one platform, you pretty much saw it another. So the notification center's all been refined.
Very much like Android.
Yes.
I don't know what they call it on Android, but that kind of appears and you can act on it without having to go somewhere else.
I can't remember what they call it on Android, but you know, it's that basically. Yep. So you can slide it off of your notification center. You can mark it to look at later. You can actually go into, say if there's a calendar appointment, you could actually physically go into the calendar. Or if it's a message, you can actually reply to it in line.
Oh, there's something. I'm just looking at people's tweets. Something that wasn't picked up on. You can now see battery uses by app inside iOS 8. So you can actually go and see what's hogging your battery. Because Shaq was just saying today, my battery life's killing me. He doesn't know why. But now you'll be able to see that the app is now actually.
So you could always do that. Again, that's another Android thing. Yep. Yep. Which is always a great thing about Android. There we go. Another one moved. Double Tap now, as well as showing your running applications, will also show your recent contacts. So you can act on. It's a bit like Heads in that Facebook brought in. So it brings out your recent contacts with their faces, and you can actually click on them to send them a text message or send them an email or phone them. So that's just another feature of their Double Tap screen. Safari, they again brought in the tabs view that we had on the desktop, and the sidebar, which contains all your sort of saved notes, sent files and things like that. Mail gestures. Do you use mail gestures?
I swipe away to kind of, you know, archive them, but that's about it. But we've had Mailbox come out, and there's a few others that have been a lot more gesture-tastic. And I guess there's Apple just responding and saying, yeah, we can do all that too.
Yeah, and they look nice. I mean, you can mark something to be read later. You can mark something as unread. You can flag something. You can delete something out of your inbox. These are all hidden. The problem with these things is they're all hidden features. So a lot of everyday users would never find it because they wouldn't necessarily know to do that gesture. So they're kind of one of those things where they're little, you call them gems, but actually say there's no way that they're highlighted because you just don't know they're there. Spotlight. So they put the spotlight basically from the desktop onto the your device as well.
Because Spotlight basically is like contacts and apps just now, but they showed you can search the app store for apps you don't have, Wikipedia, news, restaurants, songs.
Yeah. So it's just a bit more powerful. They're going to say moving everything into Spotlight. Keyboard, they're opening the keyboards up. So first of all, they talked about their own QuickType predictive typing suggestions, and they do that based on your own personal typing preferences, apparently. So apparently it's quicker to type.
It'd be interesting because it was like they showed you the corporate response, which was, yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. And the kind of non-corporate response was like, yeah, later.
Later, dude.
And it was like, I don't know. I've put in obviously my own thing. Let me edit the dictionary. See, when you keep on auto-correcting a word that I don't want you to auto-correct, give me some control.
I don't know about you, but I've been finding autocorrect on my Android and just phones and devices in general really, really annoying. It seems to be getting worse than better.
It just gets in the way.
It's cleverer than it is. It slows me down. I mean, it's hard to judge whether it slows me down more than me mistyping stuff. But mistype I can understand when you change it. But when you change a word that, you know, to split it into two words that nothing like the original is. I actually find swipe on the Android is a better and more accurate way of typing, which is that one where you don't lift your finger, you just swipe between words. It actually works better, and that's frustrating. Anyway, that there was a bit of rage from there. So yeah, so you can pick up calls that are coming in on your iOS device on the PC, as we've already touched on.
And an iPad, which I'd missed earlier on, but you can, mm-hmm. you know, phone's in the pocket, using your iPad, you can just answer your call.
Yep.
Hello?
Hello? I'm on the phone. Group messaging. So how are they going to deal with the kind of WhatsApp generation? They're doing group messaging and adding extra abilities into that kind of that dynamic. So you can actually say, I don't want to be disturbed if there's a massive thread going on that you can't be asked listening to. They've put do not disturb on. You can share your location. So you can set up these groups that you constantly use between friends, and you can show where you are. You can do things like tap to talk. So you can actually send a voice message directly from within the app, and you can receive them again. And quite clever sending and receiving methods. So if you're holding a phone, you could actually, to listen to that voice message, if it come in, you could just lift it up to your ear and it would play that voice message. And then if you wanted to reply, you can just lift up and speak in and then it will reply.
And there seem to be some nods to the kind of the security warriors amongst us, because I think for the video and the audio stuff and the photos as well, it had a little thing on it that says 2 minutes to destroy. And I think what they were saying was that after a couple of minutes, it will actually destroy unless you save that.
So they said it's not going to get saved anywhere, but it'll be there for a bit. And again, that comes from the WhatsApp generation, doesn't it? Where is it WhatsApp? But there was another one that was deliberately there to say we will never save any of these messages.
It was Snapchat.
But
they've come out and said actually we do save them, but just the users just can't see it. And the guy that runs that's an
shadow
absolute,
profile.
No, the guy that runs it's an absolute shady douche.
Yeah.
You should see, he's a slimy toad. It's like the last person you would trust with images and deleting.
Yeah, all
them.
Those things that you thought were being deleted. I can see them. Yeah. One thing I did think actually was like, you think how many drunken text messages get sent with massive regret. Can you imagine if you could just lift up your phone and without, you just don't even have to press send, it just sends it. It's like, oh God, what did I say? I've got the evidence.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what else?
So iCloud Drive. And this is a biggie, because so having that drive and folders and stuff for iCloud on the Mac was big. But there's no concept of an operating or a file system on said iOS. And now there is. You know, so within, yep. you know, if I wanted to open up a PDF, I could open it and could read it to read. But then if I wanted to edit it, you know, I could open up Adobe Reader and open it in there and put my signature on and save it back to the iCloud drive. So all of a sudden you do have
you've got a storage device and you've got applications that can, this whole interaction and allowing developers in here, they can add hooks into the iCloud drive to say, I am an editor of that file type. So when you click on that file type, it'll offer you some edit options and any application you've got installed, which will edit that file type, can also come up and actually deal with that. So it is like having a central desktop, which is away from you, and you can act on that, whether it's through your Mac or through your iOS device. So yeah.
So it's a
Dropbox Plus.
Yeah. And it's a big change. And the only thing is iCloud's not very reliable right now. So they really have to make this reliable.
Well, I've never used it on the grounds that it just didn't seem to work. So I'm sure they will get it working, but they're pushing more and more data onto it. So, you know, it could be making a groaning thing break.
There's just so many apps that I've seen that supported iCloud syncing, and I've had to drop it. And I think the kind of file size of it, actually opening a file, editing it and saving it back, that tends to work. That syncing changes between them, and even just things like
the delayed sync. Like that's what's annoying, isn't it? It's delayed
Tweetbot,
sync.
I mean, Tweetbot, you can use two different ways of syncing your timeline, and iCloud just keeps screwing up.
Yeah, and I no longer use iCloud there either. Moved away from that. Enterprise, they did talk, they kind of nodded to Enterprise. And basically said all these facilities that now we offer, I mean, a lot of them were not necessarily at their kind of hardware level, but they were software level on top of there.
Yeah, anyway. And it was like extra passcode protection of apps. There was VIP threads. You can start to manage books and PDFs, which is probably more for a school, but also for enterprises. You know, if you want to put out a whole other set of manuals and stuff alongside, you know, like if I was turning up day one and here's all your corporate apps, and by the way, here's all your, you know, employee guidelines and stuff like that. So I guess that was good. And there was also something about the previously, if you were an employee and then the employer would have to take the iOS device and take it out the box, put all their stuff on it. And I've now got a way of doing that automatically, so you can get a shrink wrap box. Wouldn't that be great? Day one. There's your MacBook Pro Retina. There's your screen. And by the way, there's your iPad and iPhone.
What boots. I would love, though, is that when you unwrapped it and you saw all of these fabulous apps that normally you'd have, and then as it auto set up, they slowly disappeared one by one, all the ones you wanted to use. and you were left with corporate intranet.
Well, corporate intranet and Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
Yeah, full stop, done.
Yeah, that was it.
Only linked up to the central server. Yeah.
And what else? You probably have Citrix on there, so you'd have a way of accessing all the kind of apps from 10 years ago that they've not written a mobile Windows front end client. For. And you're trying to try and zoom in on it to hit that toolbar button. Absolutely. I laugh.
That's the reality.
I laugh.
If you tuned into the announcement hoping to hear about a new fitness tracker and all the ways that that's going to help your life, sadly, you were a little bit left short, because all the talk of health by them was just, you know, we're giving you something called Health Kit and an app called Health. And basically, it's now up to the developers to go and fill the hole.
And I actually think there's a place for it, because I do have multiple apps tracking slightly different things, and seeing it all in one place would be nice. I have listened to other podcasts and people saying, I don't care about health. I don't care about this. I am not interested. But
enough people do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really interested in it. You know, from the weight loss stuff, the migraine tracking, I think there is a big market there.
The fact that Withings sell anything, the fact that Fitbit have turned, you know, they're Withings, these young Fitbit, upcoming companies.
Runkeeper. I mean, that was just two folk at work last week. We're like, oh, we're on Runkeeper. And I was like, so am I. And instantly we're a, you know, and again, it just kicks me on, because at the weekend I did a run, because I thought, oh, there's more people expecting me to do a run. Get out of here.
Just attach it to a dog.
I did.
Family sharing. Now, I think this might be the bit where I started nodding off. I made the mistake of actually lying down on the bed to watch the announcement. And I think this is the time that actually I started nodding off. So you're going to have to fill in the gaps here a bit. What's family sharing?
You can set up a family in iOS. So if up to six people sharing the one credit card. which made me chuckle at first, but then it was you then share photo streams, calendars, reminders, etc. I thought, fine. But then the big one, share media. So you purchase a film, everybody shares it, purchases music, everybody shares it. You're basically sharing the iTunes library, and I'm assuming also sharing apps.
Like having your DVD rack at home that you can
I thought, you know, that to make that easy to do, very nice. But also there was a thing where it said if a kid makes a purchase on your credit card, and there was lots of chuckles, but the permission then goes to their iOS device and they need to accept it.
So their parent will have to say yes. So that's quite a clever idea. And I think by calling it family sharing as well, they get around some of the media problems. Like they've wrapped up allowing you to share it with six people now into a nice little cuddly. This is done between your family, which is one of the issues they have, is I think Apple would say, you know, we're happy to share it more widely and do these kind of sharing things, but media companies definitely not.
And the next one along was photos. So and photos has got a lot of press over the last, you know, few months. Just how do you? We've all got really good cameras now. You know, it doesn't really matter if you've got an iPhone, it's the best camera. But we've all got really good cameras, and we're all taking loads of images, and they're all fragmented. It's all still feels a bit, you know. Dropbox wants us to share their content, and Microsoft wants us to upload their content, and probably Amazon does as well, and Apple wants.
And Flickr's going,
content.
I'm still here.
You get like the specialist sites, like, you know, 500 pixels is there. So there's all these different things. So what they're basically saying is, with photos, every photo you take available on every device. None of this will last 1,000, which they used to do before, and then it used to just kind of start dropping off in order. So even if you're taking lots of photos and all the good ones disappeared. But they also, you could, if you organize it in one way in one device, it's all shared. So it's just an idea of common organization. It's not fragmented. It's all in the cloud. The editing actually looked really simple now. So they showed you actually, as you just changed the colors on one, it showed you all the background work that was getting done to improve the photo, making it just really easy to, you know,
That's another aspect they're opening up to developers as well. So developers can hook into that kind of editing facility. Yep.
And also they said, and this was a surprising thing, Apple don't usually do the whole, you know, usually with the software things, they do it like, what, 3-4 months before it comes out. And it's out as beta today. But the photo app is coming to Mac early next year. So it's similar to what you're seeing on the iPad and iPhone. So I don't know what that means for iPhoto. You know, does that mean iPhotos, does that mean the iApps are starting to disappear? And you'll just have photos. So photos, they showed you on the Mac, and again, same way, edit it here, all the other devices update, you know, almost live. But it did look like a unified approach. And this was where the pricing came in, because what they said was 20 gig is 99 cents a month, 200 gig is $4 a month. And I just jumped on Dropbox site. I think Dropbox was something like $20 a month for the same 200 gig. So it's a fair old difference in price.
I'm not sure it is that much. I'm sure Dropbox is 50 quid for the year for that much storage.
So let me upgrade account, upgrade to Pro. Come on. So I want 200 gig and bill me yearly is $20 a month, or it's $200 a year. So it drops slightly, obviously, if I go for a yearly cost. But that's only, what's the Apple equivalent? That would be $50 a year.
Yeah. That's where I thought it was. Never mind.
Yeah, so quite a saving.
Yep. It probably doesn't beat Google's offering though.
No. So and also there's obviously folks saying Flickr terabyte for everybody.
Yeah. Siri. I was definitely asleep for this one because it reads.
Right. I'll do this quickly because I'm just realizing we're on an hour. Siri. Yeah, you plug it in the car. You can say, "Hey Siri." So I guess it's the same as OK Google, and it's got Shazam recognition. iOS 8, beta today, fall for everybody else.
Yeah. And then they went on to the massive developers section, which I think we can summarize this by, first of all, how utterly excited everyone in the hall got. And there was some extremely over-exaggerated clapping, like they were finding it physically excited.
So for iOS developers in particular, this is probably their biggest keynote since maybe the App Store came out, which is what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago?
All the toys and excitement that normally is left for the consumer and all their end hardware products. This is for these developers who've been asking for some of the features they talked about for a long time now. These are all the nuggets left to them. So this is for consumers, we should be quite excited by it as well.
This was the biggest bit
this
for us.
Opens up so much.
Absolutely.
So that we're going to reap the rewards of within about 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, yeah. So App Store was first, and this was a kind of smallest bit. Explore tab, trending searches, scrolling results, app bundles, so you can buy developers' apps at reduced prices. App previews, so you can finally have videos, which is like, you know, still no app demos, but
I think I was asleep for this bit. So.
Yeah, but also test flight. So test flight, they bought.
Yes, I remember this bit. So I'm awake again now.
So basically, this is a developer can invite users to beta test the app. They can get the results back in test flight, and this is all free. So again, it's another service provided by Apple. But then it was on to SDK.
Yeah, I was definitely awake again.
So I'll rattle through this and let you. We'll try and do this quickly. So 4,000 new developer APIs, and usually it's 400. Usually it's 600. So this was this set the tone. First one was extendability. So extend the system and offer capabilities to other apps, which is
great.
What people have been crying for in iOS.
Yep.
Focus very much on specific things. So actions, photo filters, and documents were the ones they talked about. I'm sure there must be some more detail there that we'll start to unpick. So there's a whole other sessions happening right now that Apple are streaming.
Yeah. The concept of actions can be actions in all sorts of different ways, though. Like I say, we've talked about shares and widgets and stuff like that. But yeah, actions could be anything.
Yeah, and the photo filters one, they were in the standard photos app, and they could pull in, I'm trying to remember the name of the app, it was like a watercolor type app.
Yeah.
It presented its own UI, you could then do your changes on it, and then it would save it back into photos. And again, documents, see just that whole, I'm now going to have a drive that I can save things to, big step change, you know, and we're really going to, I think it's going to change how a lot of the iOS apps work. So there's things that maybe people would say, I always need a laptop before. I think you're going to see that perception change yet again.
And we're going to see tons of little widgets and things that are being built as apps, you know, little plugins that actually you can use across all manner of different things. You get to choose which one you want to use in any particular circumstance.
Yeah, and the widgets, they showed you the eBay one that we touched on earlier, looked really useful. You know, presenting you some information that you just want to act on really quickly and then done with. Third-party keyboard support. So this is like a finally one. This is what people have been asking for. And you talked about the swipe.
Swipe, yeah.
And they showed you swipe. Third-party keyboard support, excellent. Touch ID. So finally, devs can actually support Touch ID. So I'm expecting, you know, things like 1Password.
All manner of different things. So they never, it's a bit like OAuth 2, you know, you never give that information to an app. It just asks, you know, it asks your Touch ID, is this person the person they say they are? And it says yes or no, effectively.
So I'm thinking, you know, the 1Password one stood out straight away. And I'm even thinking of things like, see when they said third-party keyboard support, I'm thinking you'll end up with a 1Password, you know, keyboard.
Where you log in.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, touch your, you know, pad.
Yep. And but even things like Authy, you know, so I use Authy for the authenticator code generator type things, you know, so I've got my Dropbox in there, I've got my Google one in there. Again, I'm sure it'll just Touch ID when I launch to let me in.
Yeah, it depends. And I guess it's up to companies to decide how secure Touch ID is as to whether they roll out in things like banking apps and stuff like that. Is it is it a third level support or is it?
And I think the banking apps will move over to it because my banking app.
They have to prove and have to have audibility trails and stuff like that.
But my banking app at the moment is kind of tied to the hardware device. So they are tying it to that particular hardware device. I think people will move to it. So camera API is much improved, a lot of finer control for developers. HealthKit, we've touched on already. HomeKit. So HomeKit got some talk prior to the WWDC. This was basically they've talked to lots of the different, you know, providers of things like, you know, light switches and, you know, all the kind of smart things, you know. So Withings was on there and there was a few others were mentioned on the actual slide. And all they're providing is a kind of framework to pull this together. So some common network protocol, some secure pairing, group devices together, Siri integration, so you can say like bedtime to Siri. And it will make sure the garage door's locked and make sure the boiler's, you know, set to a lower temperature or whatever you want to do overnight. And
it's the kind of kit that you used to have a dedicated bit of integrated kit that cost thousands and thousands of pounds. And now they're kind of trying to tie everything together in a much more straightforward way. Apple aren't doing anything other than offer the framework.
And they've done frameworks before and they've just not been picked up on. So it'll be, this is a wait and see, I think.
Yeah, there's no saying this will be picked up on, but yeah. And CloudKit was another one. So this is storage and authentication.
There was basically what they said is we'll provide a whole other client-side code for access and storage, as you said, authentication. They said free and then with limits and there was some groans, but the limits were 1 petabyte of assets.
They didn't make it clear. Is that was the free tier, was it?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't think they made it clear that was the free tier.
No, they said free with limits, but I think they were having a laugh about the limits. 1 petabyte of assets, 10 terabyte database size,
yeah, I just wasn't sure. I thought they said
transfer per day.
And they definitely said for free, because I interpreted that to say those limits were what you could go up to, but not necessarily on the free tier.
50 gig database transfer for free. So I could probably go back into the Verge Live thing and find the slide.
Can't be asked. Metal was one thing they talked about. This is they're basically that was in fact I thought it was Schiller, wasn't it, doing that one?
It was Craig Federighi the whole whole time.
So I thought he did quite a good job in that particular.
He was excellent
one.
Tonight.
Yeah, he was good. I think we said that last time as well. So. But Metal is basically shrinking down the interface between games and going through the kind of OpenGL application layer, basically. By shrinking it down, they did it in a nice visual way. They reckon they got 10 times performance out, extra performance 3D-wise out of the A7, which is pretty impressive. And they showed some great demos of how they brought their kind of Xbox Arcade engines onto the iPad now, basically.
Well, it wasn't just I mean, basically, EA are saying they've taken the Frostbite console engine.
So it was a full console engine. I thought they used Frostbite for their arcade games.
No, Frostbite's used for some of their big 3D. And obviously, there's different levels it can go to. It's a bit like saying probably like Unity you can use on iOS, but it's not the same as if you're sitting on a, you know, $3,000 PC workstation.
But their Plants vs. Zombies sort of quick demo screen did look impressive.
And then Zen Garden was a demo. I'm trying to remember the name of the company. Doesn't matter. But this was basically a demo of the performance.
Was it Epic Games?
Yeah, it was. It was Epic. And this will come out as free, a free kind of game or, you know, kind of sample type.
You know what? There was once an animation sort of award that got given each year for computer graphic animation, and they were very, very impressed one year with a swimming pool application where basically, I think it took them some inordinate, like 6 months to render this scene of this person diving into a swimming pool and then swimming with all the light refraction. And they now do it on an iPad, just in a quick demo. It's just unbelievable.
And the thing was, it wasn't just rendered, this was all live.
Yeah, it's all real time.
And again, great for developers. And I think it's going to be a real kick for iOS. You know, so I'm not saying the games have been stagnating, but there was a little bit of a plateau. And then the last couple of months, it's really picked up again. There's been some excellent games that have come out, you know, amazing looking games. But then I looked at this and thought, surely this is the Apple TV. Surely this is a console that Apple are going to bring out. They're doing all this work.
Maybe, but I still don't think that your iPad is the place that you go for these kind of games. I mean, they're quite impressive to work with, but I still think not having that physical controller just is such a barrier to a lot of these games.
But
I know people are coming up with solutions to that.
But they have controller support baked in now. So there's nothing to say that there won't be an Apple TV with some sort of controller. Yeah. Or they'll say, if you want a controller, go and buy one.
Mm-hmm.
So then on to a kind of more kind of geeky sprite kit and scene kit. So these were all, you know, kind of core level API supports for doing sprites and 3D scenes.
How do you put a sprite on the screen, and how do you make a 3D scene on your screen, and how easy does the SDK make it?
And they didn't do one more thing, because they've not done that since Steve Jobs. But their one more thing really was Xcode, and they've got a new programming language called Swift.
My God, four or five of them in the front row nearly spurted.
there was that old guy who was like,
he was clapping a little bit hard and a little bit too excitedly.
But he obviously spotted the camera and thought, this is my
moment, man.
Yeah,
I'm gonna. Especially when they went through how they had namespaces, and he just put him over the edge.
So it's native to Cocoa and Cocoa Touch. It was supported in Xcode. The docs are available now. And when iOS 8 and Yosemite release, you can submit a Swift app to the App Store.
Yeah, so Swift is their brand new programming language, which is actually based around C and Objective-C. Does the same kind of thing, but just does it in less lines, is what they're saying, and faster. So
yes, and they showed you some nice big bar charts that showed you, look how fast it is.
Look how fast it is, and now you've got something else to learn and get excited over. And another steep learning curve, no doubt, for all those people I bet some of them are going, but I've only just learned it. I mean, they did go on about their numbers of how many people have downloaded Xcode and how many people have actually become, you know, are on their developer community. But believe me, the amount of people that have downloaded the app and then looked at it and thought, no, this isn't for me. So they're probably still counted in there, whatever, however many million they said. But yeah, so by the by, they're some very excited people. We've got to the end of it.
So for me, that was one of the better keynotes in the last 2 or 3 years.
Not so much for what got, you know, you can't, as a consumer, you can't get excited about this by it yet, other than the fact if you sort of read 6 to 12 months down the line about what this can mean for that operating system and what it can mean for this extensibility, which this is Apple. You know how we've talked about Microsoft, the new era of Microsoft releasing across all platforms and being a bit more quick to market rather than having, you know, the end solution. Apple, this is them saying, we're opening up more and more of these areas. And actually this is the, like, sometimes they, like, notification center was, you know, massive for them, letting people put notifications on your screen. And this is them saying, actually, you can now embed it at a much more core and root level. And this is how we're doing it without losing some of the security. So we're giving you frameworks. Off you go. Have a play.
Yeah.
Ta-da. Done.
No, absolutely. And if I think, I'm actually trying to think through all the different API releases. Like, the only one that probably people are asking for, they've not done, is Siri. Everything else is pretty much
Yeah, and that's interesting to see that. Yeah, why are they still not opening that up? There must be a reason. Maybe it's just too complicated to open that up at the moment.
As you say, there must be something. Everything else,
saving it for the next time. They all got to save something, haven't they?
But because today, I mean, certainly this one was far more focused on, because last year, whether we like or not, was UI. You know, let's refresh this UI. Let's give it a kick. And it's funny, I look back at old screenshots of mine, and it does look dated. You know, whether you're a fan of it or not, there's no getting away from it that does look a dated look compared to what you use now. And this year, it's going to be interesting. As you say, it's not going to be on the. There will definitely be some interesting apps on day one, because there'll be developers right now saying, I've got 3 months to almost, you know, get something, you know, even new out there that people are going to go wow for and buy. But it will be that 6 months from now where it's going to be like, look at this.
Proper integration, properly done.
Yeah. You know, so obviously we're seeing, obviously they've selected partners and got, you know, EA and Epic and all these kind of folk have obviously got early access, and eBay with their widgets are obviously like...
Well, to be honest, they've also got the skill to be able to utilize some of these things in the quick time that they're given. That's the thing. They've got the resources to be able to put to it.
And another big thing, I'm just looking through the Twitter stream just now. The stuff's out there. I've already got somebody's already done their iPad and iPhone, and they're just about to go and do just about to do their Mac, which is just seems like complete madness for me, because it's the first betas, especially on iOS, are usually really broken.
I mean, Mavericks was okay, wasn't it? Or was it still pretty dodgy?
I stayed away from the betas because
didn't upgrade to Mavericks for ages.
No, I did it in day one when it came out. Oh, we should also put out all this is free.
There's nothing they're charging for here at the moment.
Yeah. So all this is free and it comes out in the fall. And but the one previous to Mavericks, I kind of bought the podcast software that I use. And suffered for it. So I've always been a bit more.
Right. Yes.
But I'm actually tempted to sign up to the developer program for the beta program for Yosemite and stick it on the laptop.
Yeah, when you've got the double option, you might as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're, by giving all this free, I guess they're putting their money behind the fact that people will sign up for the subscription docs service and music sharing service and, you know, having everything in one place. And actually, they probably make more money that way than by forcing you down that kind of route, and you know, you have to have that subscription to keep going. So they've clearly done the maths.
Yeah, I think there's plenty still to come, because even when you look to some of the icons, and fair enough, it might just be icon changes, but iTunes now has that red icon, and it's like, are you going to do more than just change an icon? Is there going to be something coming with Beats? Is there more to that, or is it just purely let's just tie all the icons together between, you know, iOS and OS X?
It's all good. We shall see. Times are exciting.
Yeah, because, I mean, a week from now, we've got all the E3 stuff.
Yeah.
Xbox is still pumping out announcements. That was Forza Horizon 2 got announced today. Coming this year. I know, but it's
Forza
just...
Forza Horizon annoyed me, I'm afraid. Anyway.
And it did annoy me, but I'm amazed it's getting announced today, a week before E3.
Yeah, no, why would you do that? It's a bit bizarre, yeah. So anyway, we've talked far, far too long anyway, so we should stop. Well done for getting this far. And as ever, you can find out more about who we are, what we do, at digitaloutbox.com, and you can email us info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're on Twitter and Skype, Digital Outbox. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK. And my blog is academyracer.co.uk, where you can find out all about my racing. I'm off to Zolder this weekend. Ian, where can we find you?
IanD.net, Twitter the Sweeper, 1 or 10.
Yeah, sorry about
this. This is longer than me and Shaq used to kind of jizz
At least
over.
We're talking about more than just like an unboxing of something. Yep. Fabulous stuff. I will speak to you. It will be next week, I guess, that we will talk again.
Well,
I'm not back. I'm not here, so
I can't do two of these in a week.
No, and I'm not here anyway. I'm away.
Don't need you.
Great, thanks for listening, and speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can I go and watch Game of Thrones now?
Yeah, because I'm going to watch it.